Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. This is part two of today's Q&A with Layla. And if I forgot to wish our listeners a very happy new year in part one, let me amend and wish all of our listeners who celebrated Rosh Hashanah this week a very happy, I guess it's 5775, right? So I'm not asking you, Layla. I don't know if you...
Because I don't know.
you're not the expert on that one. All right. So in part one, we talked about the Ebola epidemic. And so you can check out part one if you missed that. In part two, we've got a bunch of questions. So what are the questions?
Yeah. This comes from Michael. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I read that magnesium stearate, which is added to many supplements to enhance flow during production, is harmful for the following reasons. Here are the three that he writes. One, it impedes the absorption of the nutrients or supplements. Two, it coats the intestines with a type of film which can cause digestive disturbances. Three, contrary to its name, it does not contain magnesium. Please comment on this.
Okay. So, let me just say that there is... What is magnesium stearate? Well, magnesium stearate is basically a flow agent that is added to powders that are encapsulated so that they basically don't stick to the machinery and that they remain in a powdery state and that they can be compressed into capsules without basically gumming up the works and glomming into, you know, clotting and forming clumps. And so it's a stearic acid, which is a fatty acid. It's got it's kind of got a lubricating effect, and thus prevents the powder from sticking together. Stearic acid is part of our diets.
And it's in phosphatidylserine. It's in meat. It's a saturated fat, as a matter of fact, stearic acid.
Right.
And has a neutral effect on cholesterol.
Right. And so. It while it's a saturated fat, it's not necessarily a harmful saturated fat. Now, there has been a move afoot to stigmatize supplements that are made with magnesium stearate. The vast majority of companies make supplements with magnesium stearate. But I think in an effort to distinguish their supplement line, some manufacturers have gotten away from magnesium stearate. Maybe they use other things. I think it's part of marketing for them to say, don't use magnesium stearate. Well, then you search high and low for a supplement, and then, of course, you have to turn to them for a magnesium stearate-free supplement, which I think is unnecessary. This is particularly the case with Dr. Mercola, who is, I think, very influential in setting the tone for the debate about magnesium stearate. But to some extent, that's self-serving because the supplements that he sells on his website are magnesium stearate-free. So there's a little bit of some skin in the game for Dr. Mercola in suggesting that. I do not agree that magnesium stearate A interferes with absorption of other nutrients. I agree that it doesn't contain much magnesium. It does a very, very small amount of magnesium, but insignificant. It's not really a good source of magnesium. So
right, and it's not meant to be.
It's not meant to be a good source of magnesium. Yeah, I mean, you're going to get
a flow agent.
You're going to get tiny amounts, maybe a couple of milligrams from that. And I don't think it's...
I think the proof, Dr. Hoffman, would be anybody taking supplements containing magnesium stearate as a flow agent, we still see their levels get better. So obviously they're absorbing.
Yeah.
They're absorbing their nutrition.
If that were the case, I mean, the vast majority of our patients where we use supplements that contain magnesium stearate would be coming to harm, and the vast majority of them are enjoying great health, including yours truly. And I think you use supplements yourself that are...
I do, too, exactly, that have magnesium stearate, and knock wood, I'm terrific.
Right.
Yeah. So I don't agree with this either. I don't know what all the hoopla is about.
Yeah. So I think that's one of these false controversies that's generated, I think, to provide a market niche for unique products that are made without magnesium stearate.
Right. And this is not something, Michael also writes, while it's true that there may be only a small amount in any given supplement, if a person such as myself and many of your listeners takes many supplements with magnesium stearate, may accumulate and produce harm. It's not going to accumulate, no.
Right.
No.
I mean, for that same reason, you would have to avoid eating animal protein that's rich in magnesium stearate. I mean, rich in stearic acid.
Stearic acid,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see it as a problem.
Okay. All right. So, Michael, I hope that answers your question, and not to be afraid of supplements with some magnesium stearate in it.
Right. And by the way, this is also a view that's held by the vast majority of mainstream people in the supplement industry. They could very easily switch away from it, but they don't understand all the hoopla about magnesium stearate. So they have, and it's not that they can't, they just don't think it's necessary to make that switch.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. We have another question. We have a question from Kelly. It's regarding loss of menstrual cycle. Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I love listening to your podcast and appreciate your continued health advice. I'm a female, 22 years of age, and have concerns regarding loss of menstrual cycle. I'm going to make a very long story short here, Dr. Hoffman, and just pull out the salient points.
We like that.
She's 22, she's 5'4", and 100 pounds with a loss of menstrual cycle. Now, if we do the math, the BMI on this woman is 17.5.
Which is considered underweight.
Clearly underweight.
Right.
Yeah. Now, her doctor has also tested her body mass index, and it was, let me see here, everything there is intact, was also quite low.
Her body mass index or her fat percentage?
No, her fat percentage was also quite low.
Okay.
Now, she exercises 45 minutes to an hour daily, six times a week.
Right.
Which includes running, swimming, strength training, cardio, and she follows a paleo-type diet.
Right.
With little grains or starches.
Right.
And her doctor has recommended that she take birth control pills to elevate her estrogen because with such a low fat percentage, she's not making any estrogen.
Right. So what she
needs to maintain your menstrual cycle.
What she has is something called FAT. Paradoxically,
yeah.
She's skinny, but she's got fat. That stands for female athletic triad, which means that you're overperforming for the amount of calories that you take in. I think she's overly concerned with her food intake, and you know, paleo is fine, but she may be on a very fastidious or narrow paleo that doesn't provide enough calories for her athletic output, which is considerable. Yeah. And as a result, the body believes that it's in a state of famine, shock, or deprivation. And one of the things that is expendable in the body is the reproductive function. And this is, goes according to evolutionary principles. If your brain at a level where in the hypothalamus is perceiving that you're under a tremendous amount of stress, you're calorically deprived, and maybe you're fleeing from predators or from an enemy, or maybe you're migrating away from some place of famine, you're going to stop your fertility. And you're going to stop your menstruation, which actually uses up a considerable amount of energy calorically in the body. So the body's sparing, is sort of favoring your survival over reproduction. And you get into a loss of periods. And for some women, it's just a matter of encouraging them, hey, you know, body image is very important, but encouraging them to gain a little weight, be a little less stringent about diet, and exercise less. Unfortunately, that's the way it's got to be. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, why is this a problem? You know, some women may say, well, great, you know, I don't have any periods. It's no fuss, no bother. I get to save on Kotex and Tampax and, but...
which you're getting more and more expensive, yes.
but it does your body harm because you are putting yourself at risk for osteoporosis. This is one of the... When we see young women who have a surprisingly low bone density, one of the questions we ask is, you know, how much do you exercise? How much food do you take in? Has there been any time where you've lost your periods? Have you ever suffered from an eating disorder like anorexia? This is a major risk factor for osteoporosis in younger women. So that could be so you could say, well, hey, you know, and some women actually come to us after years of not having periods and like, you think this is a problem? It's like, yes, it's a problem. We check their bone density and we go, oh my God, you have the bone density of a 70-year-old at the age of, 35. So that could be problematic.
So
the answer,
our advice,
the birth control pill, I don't think is such a great solution because it doesn't really attack the problem. It artificially induces periods, and it doesn't do much to enhance bone density. So I
can't think of a supplement either. Can you?
No. I mean, the traditional Chinese medicine sometimes there's herbs, acupuncture.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, in traditional Chinese medicine, sometimes women who have menstrual difficulties, we give them acupuncture. We give them certain herbs. I generally send patients like this to a traditional Chinese medicine practitioner. They have ways of regulating and triggering optimal menstruation. And since fertility was a big issue in ancient China, you know, having a baby was, especially a male heir, was a big deal.
Yeah.
They really evolved a very sophisticated system to promote reproductive capacity. But you can't ignore the simple laws of thermodynamics. You know, if you burn off more calories than you take in, your body's going to be in a state of conservation, and you will lose your periods.
Mm-hmm. Oh, best of luck, Kelly.
Yeah.
Okay. We have another question from Anita. This is interesting. Can you comment on the efficacy of ZYTO technology, ZYTO? This is like biocommunication. My doctor suggested I try this technique to analyze food sensitivities. It's like bioenergetic medicine, I believe. It's a computerized analysis based on hand contact with the hand sensor. And I was looking at this website a little bit, and basically it goes by the energetic field that living organisms are composed of and impacted by energy, and this technology is supposed to show how we react to certain things. It reminds me of the kinesiology.
Yeah.
For determining food sensitivity. Look,
you know, this is an electrodiagnostic technique, and some of my colleagues, some medical doctors, but often chiropractors, some naturopaths, healers use this type of program to diagnose and come up with suggestions for treatment for patients. And I have to say that I am a skeptic about that. I don't use this technique in my practice. I do realize that some people get help from practitioners who utilize these techniques. So maybe in the hands of a skilled practitioner, they can use this technique to reinforce good suggestions for diet and the right kind of supplements. But I think the evidence for the ability of a computer diagnostic system to diagnose diseases or organ imbalances and come up with formulas for people to take is sketchy. And also, I think people are very impressed by computers. You know, if it's like a computer and it's a sophisticated system and it's got flashing lights.
And it seems to play with the gadget.
Yeah, you know, it seems it takes on an aura of, technological marvel. And I just don't think that that stuff is ready for prime
time. Could you imagine that people start playing with this kind of gadget on the subway rather than playing the games on their iPhones and things? I just had a visual there.
And we're going to – we've got iWatches. We've got, all kinds of new wearables. And God knows where that's going to go. But, look, I just don't – that's off my radar screen. I just don't even utilize this technique.
Yeah. Okay. We have another question here from Kathy.
Yep.
And again, I'm making a very long story short. And just a reminder for our listeners, don't send us your complete medical history because we're not going to look at that.
Yeah, so some people think that if they omit a single detail about their medical history, that they're not going to get the correct answer. You just have to ask, please ask a general question. And if you send us a whole big, long, complicated thing, I mean, that's what we do when we consult patients one-on-one, and we're perfectly capable of doing that. But if it's a very complex medical problem, we're not going to probably weigh in on it on the air because that would be, it's actually medically incorrect.
You need to come in and see us. You need to make an appointment and come see Dr. Hoffman.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds self-serving, but, literally it's impossible to treat by remote control for, it would be irresponsible to offer pat answers to someone we haven't even seen.
So here's the question from Kathy. I would like to know if there are any alternative treatments, naturally, of course, that could help my symptoms of hyperparathyroidism.
Okay. Got it. Yeah. And so the answer is there's two types of hyperparathyroidism. First of all, what is hyperparathyroidism? Well, there are these little tiny glands that sit on top of your thyroid. That's why they're called parathyroids, because they're beside your thyroid. So they're called parathyroids. There are four of them. They're tiny. And sometimes they get out of kilter. And when they get out of kilter, they produce a substance called PTH, parathyroid hormone, which triggers the release of calcium from the bones in the body. That's where you're going to find most of the calcium stored in the body, in your bones. And the result is you'll have high blood calcium, but you'll also have osteoporosis. And you have a variety of symptoms that can be annoying. They can be mental and emotional symptoms, psychological symptoms, mood problems. You can get...
She's having palpitations and anxiety, yeah.
Yeah, and certainly that could be related to that. You can also have kidney stones, and you can have pancreatitis associated with that. But the biggest problem is osteoporosis. And sometimes in what's called secondary hyperparathyroidism, it's treatable with vitamin D. It actually turns out that the body overproduces parathyroid hormone in the absence of vitamin D, and you can just give vitamin D and it'll tune up your parathyroids. But in most cases, parathyroid hormone gets overproduced when you have a what's called an adenoma, which is a benign tumor, not cancer, but it's a growth of one or another of the parathyroids. And the solution is to, unfortunately, remove one of the parathyroids, the culprit that's overproducing the parathyroid hormone. It's actually a very delicate surgery. There's some surgeons who just specialize in doing that surgery alone because it's very hard to...
Wow.
They're hard to see, they're hard to find, they're hard to remove properly. And while it's not a very deep surgery, it doesn't go deep in the body, it's kind of, you know, it's in your neck. You don't have to go deep inside the body. It requires a specialist to treat it properly. So, unfortunately, I can't say that there's a magic nutritional therapy other than vitamin D, which is actually counterproductive if you have the wrong type of hyperparathyroidism, because if you have the wrong type, taking vitamin D could be counterproductive. So this is requires a little expertise by an endocrinologist and a nutritionally oriented physician to figure out if it's amenable to vitamin D therapy. I think the minority of cases are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, best of luck to Kathy.
Yeah.
Our next question is from Judy. This is regarding allergy, and she tried a sunscreen. She tried Vanicream, which contained zinc oxide and titanium oxide a few times. Every time I used it and was in the sun, I broke out into a very itchy rash. Dermatologist prescribed a cream which helped, but she said the rash was not from the sunscreen because people with sensitive skin use Vanicream.
Right.
I find that hard to believe.
Right.
I've been in the sun with a different sunscreen and I'm fine. Could I be allergic to zinc oxide?
Yeah, I think that's possible but unlikely. I think there's maybe something in that Vanicream as hypoallergenic as it is. There may be something in it, or there may be something that happens when sun hits that and activates some compound within it that makes it damaging to the skin for her, not for everyone, because obviously then they would put it on the market if it was bad for everyone. Zinc oxide is actually one of the more neutral sunscreens. It's the old-fashioned thing that lifeguards used to put on their noses, that white stuff. And it's not very attractive, but it sure blocks the rays of the sun very effectively. And it's a non-chemical way of doing it. So I actually don't mind zinc oxide products. The problem comes in when we use what are called nanoparticles, which are very, very tiny particles. They get into the environment and they can, damage... if swallowed or inhaled, they can damage the digestive tract or the lungs. And so the spray-ons I'm not crazy about because it's hard to control that. Titanium under a microscope is a sharp, jagged particle. And so we don't really want to ingest it. I don't know precisely what's going on, why she's having a sensitivity.
Yeah.
She can go to a dermatologist, maybe get patch tested for some of the ingredients in that to see if there's contact dermatitis associated with one or another carrier that is for the zinc oxide. But, it's going to take a little detective work to find out which component is causing the problem.
Okay. All right, Judy, I hope you found that helpful.
We have time for one more.
Great. This one comes to us from Nina. What is Dr. Hoffman's opinion about calcitonin for osteoporosis? I've read that, one, it helps slow bone loss. Two, it increases bone density.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's calcitonin, I guess, is the Forteo product. And,
Is it? Is that primarily what Forteo is?
I'd have to check that, but I think it.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is. There was a nasal product called Myocalcin, which I think is calcitonin, salmon calcitonin.
Okay.
But
I'm confusing it with osteocalcin, which is endogenous.
Right, that's what the body makes. But
right, right.
Yeah,
okay.
What Forteo? I think Forteo is a form of calcitonin. Let me just, no, actually, it's not. It's I'm looking it up. It's actually an inducer, and so calcitonin is you can take. There's a product called Myocalcin. It's a nasal spray. And it's actually more effective on the spine than on the hips. It doesn't do much for the hips, and it doesn't do much, really, on the spine. I don't use it very much. It also tends to cause nasal irritation and sometimes allergic reactions in the nasal passages. So its usefulness is limited. Not many doctors are prescribing it anymore.
Oh, so this is kind of old school, or?
I'm not sure. I'm looking up the Forteo product. As we speak.
But, yeah. Meanwhile, while you're looking for that, again, we'll just reiterate briefly, our supplements for osteoporosis, definitely strontium, definitely DHEA. Once we've checked your levels, we like Ostera, we like OsteoSupport, we like MK7, which is vitamin K. Fish oil is always helpful.
Mm-hmm.
A good diet that's not too acidic, not too high in grains and things like that. And
right.
Just to let everyone know, calcium is not, it's not all about the calcium, and that's something I'm going to write about in a future newsletter. It's not all about the calcium for bone health.
Right. We tend to overemphasize
that. Complex.
Yeah. So yeah. Here's the latest on calcitonin. Headline, this is from March of 2013, over a year ago, FDA panel says to stop marketing salmon calcitonin for osteoporosis. Experts on, you see, the sirens are coming to take it away.
Yeah.
It's like we have background sounds when we record podcasts here in New York City. Experts on two of the U.S. Food and Drug Administration's advisory panels opted to recommend that marketing of calcitonin salmon for the treatment of osteoporosis in women greater than 5 years after menopause be stopped. They say in the U.S. calcitonin is marketed, as I said, as Myocalcin, and it was approved in 1986 as an injection and in 1995 as a nasal spray. There's a calcitonin salmon recombinant FortiCal nasal spray, which is just another name for calcitonin. And so, you know, what they're saying here is that it's really not that effective, as I said. So, you know, I had the right answer. I just wasn't sure about the status of the drug. It's fallen into disfavor, as far as I know. And the Forteo is actually a synthetic drug, which is an injectable drug, which patients self-inject. It's a different story. It does enhance bone. It's only to be used for 2 years because of concerns over bone cancer, which were found in experimental animals. So that's not one I'm that anxious to use. But, hey, if you're at extreme risk for osteoporosis and nothing else has worked, that can be used. But, you know, we have to look at the risk-benefit equation. Many of these drugs have side effects. And if they're, you know, if you have really high risk of fracture, you might run the slight risk of side effects. But we find that most of our patients don't end up requiring Actonil, Beneva, Forteo, Reclast, Fosamax, or the latest, which is starts with an R. What is that latest one? There's a new one. It's very popular. It's very expensive.
Reclast
is Reclast. I mentioned Reclast. That's an injectable.
Okay.
That is in the same family as Fosamax. But there's another one which is getting very popular, and I keep thinking R, but I'll look up what.
Yeah, and in the meantime, what is the name, which I keep forgetting, that machine that causes vibration?
Oh, yeah, we like that. That's the Live platform made by Marodyne, M-A-R-O-D-Y-N-E.
Marodyne, yes.
Yeah, and that
the
is...
Live platform.
Yeah, okay. That's a treatment that you can utilize. So the latest, greatest medication, and I'm just trying to look it up.
okay.
Well.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think any medication that may have a side effect of causing cancer is one to throw straight out the window. My opinion. Wow.
Yeah, so, I mean,
you know,
I think our treatment is sufficiently effective to make it less necessary in most cases for patients to require that. So the new drug, it rankles me that I don't know the name of the drug, because it actually works on a pathway in the body called rankle. And the new medication is called denosumab. Denosumab is a monoclonal antibody, which is a powerful drug, and it's being sold under the name of Prolia. I know there was an R somewhere in there.
Prolia. Okay.
And it's expensive, and I think it's overkill in the vast majority of cases. But for very, very severe osteoporosis, didn't respond to anything else. I guess there are options there for those who need medication. But Prolia has now been, and unfortunately, the most expensive drugs sometimes get the most publicity and advertising from the pharmaceutical industry, because the profit margin is enormous. It's very expensive.
That's true, yeah.
Okay, so that's the story, and I'm sticking to it. And that's it for this week's edition of Q&A with Layla. Thank you, Layla, for joining us. And
thank you very much.
And for those, once again, a very happy new year to many of our listeners. And we'll be back again next week for more Q&A with Layla, along with our usual podcasts available at drhoffman.com. If you're desirous of learning more about some of the supplements we talk about during this podcast, once again, drhoffman.com. Check out the store. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.